So, guys, women are bad luck on ships, like as we already discussed. But with their boobs out, are good luck at sea, and that's why mastheads mostly have topless women's because it shames the seas into being calm.
Because boobs are scary? Hey everybody, this is Vassals of Kingsgrave back for the 85th, count them, 85th episode of the Great Linear Song of Ice and Fire reread. Slowly but surely we are trudging towards the end of A Feast for Crow, hitting our final straight of the three final episodes of this reread on this book. My name is Bina 007, I'll be your host for this evening, and we have got three chapters that are all Lannister all the time. So we've got Jaime 5 from Feast, Jaime 6 from Feast, and Tyrion 8 from Dance. These events take place between May 8th and May 10th, 300 AL. So actually, this may well be a episode that's published kind of on the same days as when it's meant to have taken place, fictionally, also long ago. Today, I am joined by Mary.
Hi, everyone. It's the Mary on the forums.
By Nadia.
Hi, everyone. This is Nadia.
Back by popular demand, it's White Raven.
Hey, Brett in real life.
And Varley.
Varley on the forums.
Vali Movali, and by Jock.
Hello, no Jock, you on the forums.
Right, so as ever, the views are ours, not necessarily of Vok as a whole, and this episode could spoil anything from Song of Ice and Fire. That's already been published. I'm very sure it probably won't spoil anything from TWoW. If it does, we'll let you know well in advance, and it won't discuss things from the show because Mary's not watching it.
Thank you.
And we will respect that, and that the views of all listeners who have managed to stay spoiler-free till now, which is awesome. Nearly hitting the final straight there.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. So the end of the last episode, which I encourage all of you to listen to, listeners, if you haven't already. It's a really good one. Really insightful commentary. A good argument between Nadia and Thomas on the forums to OG Vox having a really interesting debate. We're kicking off today with Jaime 5. This takes place on May the 8th. It's the next linear chapter, actually, after that incredibly weird and awkward to read Cersei 7 chapter. And who's doing the summary for this one?
That would be me. I volunteer as tribute.
Hashtag Vali. Off you go.
Okay, so this chapter starts out with Devon Lannister coming up to Jaime's camp and letting him know what's going on at Riverrun. Jaime then goes to Riverrun, sees what's going on, notices that not all of the Riverlords that had pledged allegiance are there, sees how Devon has, or confirms that Devon's story about how the Freys are fucking up the whole thing, and then he has a very cool conversation with Jenna. So that we get a lot of name drops in this chapter. So I went through them, and Sir Devon, he was the son of the guy that got killed in Oxford, and because he got killed, he swore not to shave his beard, and now he has an awesome manly beard, and he complains that Karstark took his revenge away from him, but it's getting cold out, and he likes his beard and keeps his face warm, and I can relate. Let's see, we also get all the Frey names, and we get Ryman Frey, who is almost always drunk, and he's the father of Edwin Frey, who is full of hate, and I'm not sure why, and I couldn't find out through the interwebs. Does anyone know why he's so full of hate?
Because he's not next in line.
Yeah, I guess so.
He really doesn't like his father.
We get Emon Frey. He is now Lord Emon. He married Jenna, and he's a nervous bitch. And then Perwin Frey, who's likable. And then the bastard Walder, who's a bastard and hates everyone who is not a bastard.
Probably hates John too.
Yeah, probably. But no. We get this weird scene of Jaime walking through the camps where he makes it. Jaime seems very frenetic and almost manic in the way he swings in this chapter. From like, so he's walking through the camp. He's like, yeah, these are my people, but they're like common folk and common soldiers. And he feels more comfortable than he does in court around them. And I never got that sense where Jaime would want to be around any type of common folk.
He doesn't seem like a man of the people.
Yeah. So
in fairness, was he a man of anyone? Because because he didn't ever seem particularly excited to be around Rando aristocrats either. I think he was just Cersei, and anyone else who's not Cersei, he holds in contempt or basic non-interest. Sorry, Brett.
No, he really wanted to be around Brynden Tully.
But that's a hero.
He went to visit them.
Hero worship.
You got that flashback in this chapter as well about him telling tales of the Nine Penny Kings, and Jaime just caring about that and not about Lysa Arryn or her older sister, who was much more interesting, but pledged to the Lord of Winterfell, or the heir of Winterfell. Yeah, we got this flashback stories of the Blackfish, and then Kanos Case blows the Horn of Herrick, and I was like, whoa, the Horn of Herrick, what's that? And the interwebs just said it's a black horn that is of House Case, so
that was less exciting than it might have been.
Then he has a chat with Jenna, who is a formidable lady character in the books and sadly is absent from everything else. She expresses her disgust at Cersei arming the Faith Militant and kind of goes into a history lesson, which I think is the first time we ever hear about the Faith Militant in the books. Or maybe we heard about them when Cersei actually rearmed them, but I think we get more of a history lesson in this chapter. Anyway, they're a bastard, and then Maegor tried to kill them all, and then Jaehaerys, the conciliated, and, they disarmed.
Well, Tyrion definitely talks about it, but I don't know if he does yet. Like, I don't know the timeline.
Right, especially with the reread, it gets confusing because, the chapters are,
not necessarily in order.
So I felt like that might have some strong foreshadowing about, Cersei's upcoming plight. We go into the Lannister history, and as Bina said in her recap, it ends with Jenna telling Jaime that you smile like Jyrion, you fight like Tyg, and there's some Kevin in you, else you would not wear that cloak. But Tyrion is Tywin's son, not you, which is a badass closing line. But I was like, who are all these people? So, Tygon, he was a good warrior. But
you really did your homework.
Yes. He was, interestingly, he was going to be named Master of Arms while Tywin was Hand. But Aerys went over his head and named Willem Dary, who would later spirit Daenerys and Viserys off a Dragonstone and would sign the pact with Dorne. So he obviously was much more House Targaryen than Tyget would have been. He died of a pox, and his son Tyrek was lost in the King's Landing riot. We have Jaehaerys. He was the youngest, and he was the funnest uncle, according to Tyrion. And he went in search of Bright Roar, the Lannister House sword, in the desolation of Valyria. So that leads me to question, why the fuck was their sword in Valyria?
No, he took their sword to Valyria. He lost it.
Oh, I thought he was in search of it.
He went to recover it.
Yeah. Oh, did he go to recover it?
I think he just wanted, any Valyrian sword that he could claim for the Lannisters.
And they already named it before they even had it.
Hold on. Okay, I remember. There was one of the Lannister kings went off on a trip to Valyria to find out what had happened there. And he disappeared with all his men and the ships. So then Jaehaerys also goes to Valyria to find that sword. I'm not sure if it's something that started with D, the king. I don't remember his name. It was Tyrek. I think it might have been Tyrek or Tyget or something. One of those. Like one of the Tyes.
Tywin or Tyrion is one of them.
Yeah.
So they tracked him. They were able to track him all the way to Volantis, where his ship had mutinied, and he actually bought slaves to go on to Valyria, and then he disappeared off the side of the planet. So who knows if we'll see him again. And then Kevin, of course, we've already met. He's dutiful and was Tywin's right hand. And as Jenna said, kind of lived in Tywin's shadow and struggled to get some light, but he made kind of peace that was his position. And then the fact that, she basically throws Jaime under the bus for, killing Aerys and says that Tyrion is actually Tywin's son more than he is. So that kind of hurt. But overall, a pretty interesting chapter.
It was not a tie. It was Tommen Lannister. That was the king's name.
Oh, did he bring Sir Pounce with him?
Anybody else feel like Jenna Lannister is like the Lannister version of Olenna Tyrell?
Mm-hmm.
Except that.
Yeah. I feel like every family probably has like the matriarch that is really smart that nobody listens to, that gets really frustrated with all the men.
Yeah, but I do think that Olenna Tyrell has more of an impact on the story and what's going on. like she works in the shadows and the men don't necessarily listen to her, but she has plans and they happen. And I don't think Jenna Lannister really does much.
Right. Olenna has pull.
Yeah.
Jenna just sits back and lets her brother do the work.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't listen to her even if she had something to say.
Yeah.
Oh, and also in the very beginning, Sir Davin talks about how all the Freys are Stotish, which I thought I confused with the type of hobbit, the Stores. But Stotes are actually Irish weasels.
Yeah, because you know that.
I did not. Sorry, I'm not up to date on my Irish vermin, but
it's what we call them here as well. I think this comparison or this echoing towards Olenna Tyrell is very deliberate, and I think what George is trying to give us is an example of a woman who is quite wise and who clearly probably does have the talent and the acumen to be a player of the Game of Thrones, but actually, although she's kind of quasi cluing Jaime in on history, chooses to accept her place as a woman, so she never has tried, probably. And I think this is interesting because it's in contrast with Cersei, who is obviously making a very half-assed attempt at being a Lannister woman of power.
She's the one who mentions that all her brothers felt like they had been overshadowed by Tywin. And maybe that's true for her as well. Like, maybe she didn't take a more active role because Tywin was, you know, kind of this.
That's what I was going to say. Like, maybe now that Tywin's gone, it'll change. Like, she just thought the place was in good hands with him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a mark of her status that, you know, she's able to meet with Jaime alone, and Jaime, I guess, suffers it. If you know, and like, he's fine with meeting and wanting to hear her thoughts and, you know, reactions to certain news. So I think that's kind of telling.
Oh, we also get in this chapter that the outlaws are like killing everybody, and they still think it's Beric.
Yeah, and there's go ahead.
Sorry. No, Davin Lannister points out that it might be wolves instead of, and they're both right. Like, it's Stoneheart who is both a wolf, and she's taken the blares of Beric. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, and they also think like maybe the River Lords haven't all, you know, they haven't all showed up, which is telling. But also maybe, you know, the ones that have showed up have only half-heartedly shown up. And actually, one of the nice parts of this chapter is when he comes up to River Run and sees the Tully Trout flying above it, and then above that, the Dire Wolf of Winterfell still. But yeah, they also see fires encircling them, so there's kind of this sense of foreboding with, like, the fires circling, they find their foragers hanging from trees, and then there's this off comment about, you know, how one Frey brought a singer from wherever, so another Frey had to find a singer, and then we know who that singer is, that I think is in Brett's chapter.
Yeah, Thomas Evans.
Yeah, uh-huh. So kind of get the noose is kind of closing around Riverrun, I think.
It's even more of interesting because of the setup of the wedding between Davin and an unnamed Flay. So there's lots of people heading to Riverrun. As Davin said, the corpses had been stripped naked and each man had a crab apple shoved between his teeth. None bore any wounds plainly, they had yielded. So not only do they have spies inside, but they seem to be collecting uniforms. So they've beaten up the venge to the Red Wedding. Because Blyden did get out as soon as Edmure came to him after speaking to Tom, so.
Yep.
I never thought, I just thought they were stripping the body for, like, boots and stuff. I never thought, like, maybe they'd show back up as, like, Lannister army men, but in disguise.
They're all around you.
They are.
Because basically my entire interest in a feast is all about the relationship between Jaime and Cersei evolving. How do you all feel about, I don't know if you listened to the last episode, but it ends with Cersei basically having sex with Tyanna Meriwether and getting no joy out of it because it's, she kind of comments to herself that if it's not Jaime, it's kind of doesn't mean anything. She doesn't feel anything. She can't gain pleasure despite the fact that she's cheated on him multiple times. And then in this chapter, we get Jaime like obsessing about her betraying him. I thought it was kind of poignant to put the two together because he feels really betrayed, but if only he knew that she didn't, she still kind of obviously is in love with him, despite
that. How does that usually go in a relationship? But they meant nothing.
But it's true in this case. Yeah.
Even if they mean nothing, I don't think Jaime means much more to her. He's just a bit of fuck, and I think he would still feel very betrayed by the fact she's I mean, he feels betrayed by the fact that she's not faithful, regardless of what she thinks about it.
What do you think he'd be more or less upset by the fact that she's cheated on him with a woman?
At this point, I don't think he'd care if it's just one more person.
Yeah.
Yeah. He already dreams about, you know, knocking her teeth out after catching her with Moon Boy. And so, well, that's all I got.
Do you all want to get into the Tyrion parentage chat? Especially in the previous episode, they have the death of Aemon, and part of his internal musings before he dies are what sort of wondering. Well, he says, you know, I got to her too late. The dragon has three heads, and I won't be there to be one of the heads of the dragon. Do you all think he is going to be a Targaryen? Do you think that's just like R plus L equals J? It's just known. And
I don't think we really need a Targaryen for there to be like, I mean, we need someone of Targaryen blood, but it doesn't have to be a pure blood Targaryen. We've already seen that in the Dance of the Dragons, the princess and the queen. Like, anyone who has, like, even a little Targaryen blood can ride the dragons. So, Nettles might have been a bastard. You know, we don't really know where she came from. So, and she might not have been a Targaryen at all. Which
she just fed him sheep.
Yeah, it means that anyone could ride a dragon, right? So, we don't necessarily need a Targaryen for that. I mean, yeah, the Targaryens like to think that only that they can ride dragons, but, you know.
Which is why they keep it in the family.
Yeah,
exactly.
Hmm. I agree, and I think I don't know what, I mean, it's definitely not as clear as R plus L equals J to me, like Tyrion's parentage. I don't think it's as obvious or as known in the books as Jon being a Targaryen, which is, I think, fairly accepted at this point.
How would we even find out? Like, get confirmation? Like, I guess Barristan, maybe?
Maybe Treebrand sees it in a vision?
Yeah, maybe Treebrand, because I have a feeling Barristan would have we've already gotten a couple of his POVs, and he's never even, besides taking, when he said he took a few liberties on the wedding night, I think, it was the
He hasn't actually seen Tyrion yet. He might think differently if he does, if we even get another point of view from him, or if he makes it through the battle.
I think Treebrand is starting to become our answer to everything.
Yep.
Maybe Treebrand will see it.
Yep. He's the new hashtag Greg.
Yeah.
I don't know why Treebrand would care, but maybe he will. Or how will you even see it? Would he do it in the Godswood?
I don't know.
Yeah, but I have a feeling like Barristan's already seen Tyrion like at court and everything, so it would have.
But we never got a point of view.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like it would have come up already, like as he's dealing with Daenerys, and be like, well, actually, you have a brother, and you know.
No. I mean, it's not guaranteed. He might not know that Tyrion is the son, but like if Tyrion is good with the dragons, all of a sudden maybe Barristan's like, well, maybe this is what happened, because he was overly friendly with her. Friendly might not be the right word.
Does anybody think that Tyrion could be a Chimera? Well, he is a Chimera, but like as in both like Aerys and Tyrion's pale image.
Yeah.
I think that theory's kind of silly, but maybe. I mean, this is coming from Moondragons, all right, guys?
That was not a silly theory. So after Jaime 5, we roll straight into Jaime 6, which takes place 2 days later on May 10th. We skip 4 chapters and 65 pages in my edition to get there. And who has the chapter summary?
I do.
Yay! Off you go, Brett.
Just redirect everyone to like VOK 78 in the Full Castle recording of this chapter.
All right, ready?
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing special. I feel like there's been some people that have made chapter summaries that have set an ugly precedent for how good we have to be. So I'm not that good. I'm just going to read what I wrote. It's nothing special. Jaime meets with Sir Brendan Tully, the Blackfish, outside the castle. They greet each other as Kingslayer and Blackfish. Not the best start. Blackfish asks for Jaime if he's returned to give back Catelyn's daughters or resume his occupancy in the cells. Jaime declines his fine offer, even though they just put fresh rushes on the floor. Right away, we get a sense of how hard it is going to be for the kingdom to be pulled back together now that the rules of war have been broken by Aside. No honor means no trust. Honor is important. Jaime offers to let all the Blackfish's men go and allow him to take the Black where Jon is. Blackfish does not trust Jon or Jaime and declines his offer and tells him he would rather fight. They have a back and forth about sieges, men, and provisions, and the Blackfish has made it very difficult to siege his castle. Jaime offers a duel instead. Brendan turns him down. He doesn't accept because he didn't trust him to begin with anyway. So they part ways with nothing accomplished. Jaime calls a war council. He listens to several scenarios from his bickering lords, like his father used to. We see how the families are at odds with one another. None of them seem to get along. The siege leader, Ryman Frey, is too drunk to even show up to the meeting. Jaime sends them out and tells them to prepare for an attack in the morning. Jaime goes to talk to Edemure, who has been standing in a noose day after day as a hollow threat for the Blackfish. Sir Ryman Frey defends his reason for putting Edemure out day after day. Jaime gives Ryman a lesson in why you shouldn't make idle threats that is punctuated with a golden backhand. He tells him to leave the camp and don't come back. And he gives his son Edwin the command and orders the release of all captives. Jaime grabs Thomas Sevens and cuts down Edemure to clean him up and tell him he's going to be released to River Run. He tells him that all he has to do is surrender the castle and everyone will be allowed to live. If he doesn't, they will kill everyone, reduce the castle to rubble, and when his son is born, with an added bonus, he'll deliver him with a trebuchet. He leaves Edemure to mull over his offer and instructs the singer to play for him while he thinks. You know the song, the one about the rain. That's it. That's all I got.
I hate the phrase.
I read this chapter to my unborn child.
Just to let him know.
Just, yeah, you know, just sending that out there. But, you know, knowing who's alpha.
Even the part about the Queen of Whores.
Even the part about the Queen of Whores with Jon Snow. God damn it. Rob Stark's crown.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to put that in. It was Rob Stark's crown.
Was it Rob's or Jane's?
No, it was a brass crown with iron spikes or whatever that she was holding.
Oh, yeah.
What do we think Jaime's doing? I mean, obviously he's doing a good thing to like get the castle to surrender, but releasing all the captives and everything, is that something Tywin would have done?
He would have burnt the fucking thing to the ground.
Possibly. I do think putting Edemure back in the castle and having him surrender is the right move, but I don't know if like releasing all the captives and letting everybody go free is the right move necessarily.
Is he actually releasing everyone, or is he just taking them from the phrase?
Huh.
Well, he told them to release all their captives, okay. So I thought that meant release, but maybe not.
No.
I kind of interpreted
release them. He told them to return the captives.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to release everybody anyway.
No, wow. I think he means the captives that Walder Frey is holding at the Twins, the ones that were taken at the Red Wedding.
I thought he said told them to release them.
I'm pretty sure he meant the ones that at the Twins, because Lord Piper or Lord Vance or one of them asks about his son. You know, he went as a guest and
still being held.
Even know he's alive. Yeah, he's still being alive. So I think that Jaime wants like the Lannisters would want that in their control, right? Because they need these lords to keep following them, and for that they need leverage.
I don't think they want leverage. I think Jaime right now is looking at, you know, when Tywin was talking to Joffrey about, you know, when a, you know, rebel lord bends the knee, you help him get back up or else they'll just rebel again. I think that's what he's trying to, like,
Actually, the line for me that we are talking about is when he says to Edwin, or to anyone, send word to Lord Walder, the crown requires all his prisoners. So to me that meant, like, I don't know if they're going to release them or just take them from the phrase, so...
Do you think maybe they want like an accurate inventory of who exactly is in their custody?
Well, maybe just the fact that like Lord Piper is not even sure if his son is alive, because the Frey have him. If the crown has his son, it's different because he's still a hostage, but he hates so much the phrase that the fact that they still have his son is no good for the whole alliance.
That's why everybody's like at odds, that nobody gets along.
Yeah, what you said during your recap about like how the Red Wedding just broke trust with everyone and how no one like really is on the same side again is so true.
Yeah, that's why honor is important. You can't just, once you violate it, you'll never be trusted again. Or at least you need to build trust back up somehow. Mm-hmm. And threatening someone with throwing their kid with a trebuchet probably isn't the best way to get the trust back on your side.
So Thomas Sevens is there. Do you think Edmure recognizes him as the same singer that sang about his limp dick?
Oh, yeah.
Years ago?
Oh, yeah, okay. He does. He says, not this one.
Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
I have a provocative question. Tywin, Tyrion, Jaime. Jaime is the wisest of the three at this stage of the books.
Tywin, Tyrion, Jaime?
Well, Tywin's dead, so he's not very wise.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming.
But he wasn't wise there. I mean, he wasn't as wise as he thought he was all the way through the books.
I would have liked to have seen how Tywin would have gone down had he not been shot by his son, because that was kind of a weird situation.
Mm.
Yeah. But then again, it was kind of...
But in his
I guess
own,
it wasn't planned, but...
In his own reluctance to remarry, he had left... He was dependent on Tyrion, who he didn't rate to take forward the family name. He had exerted apparently no influence on Cersei or his grandchildren to make sure they were raised to be good monarchs. I just don't think he turns out to be as wise or as omniscient as we thought. Maybe in the aftermath of the Red Wedding, when we thought, wow, he's this amazing puppet master who arranges everything. This is the S.J. Lee kind of view of Tywin, I should add, as well.
Well, if when you talk about Tywin, you have to also talk about what his history is. I mean, he was Hand of the King, and they had peace in the realm for a long time as him as the Hand. And, you know, like even the Baratheons talked about how great he seemed to be, how kingly. So I think there's more to Tywin than just,
yeah, but
you know,
he's,
losing
he's
in the Whispering
like,
Woods.
He's like the Hagen of, you know, who's that guy, the consigliere that Michael Corleone has? And he's like, he's fine as Tom Hagen. He's like decent enough as a peacetime consigliere, but we're at war. So who better than my own father? You know, it's like you can be a good hand of the king and ensure peace when you have a very malleable but not sadistic or sort of ridiculous king like Robert. But it's different to be a good hand of the king in a time of war. It's not clear to me that since the events of this book, he's as wise as we all thought. Playing a little bit devil's advocate, but I think that, you know, Tyrion at present is this drunken fool, you know, cutting off.
Oh, he's been through some shit.
He's been through some shit, but it's not clear to me that his acting out and stuff at the end of A Storm of Swords was necessary. I feel Jaime's on a road to, you know, how he handles River Run, I think is actually quite wise.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like you can then say that, well, they all had their hints of brilliance and wisdom. You know, Jaime attacking Ned in the middle of King's Landing wasn't the fucking smartest thing, but
true,
that happened.
Well, I mean, pushing Bran out of the window wasn't the smartest thing either, but, you know.
People evolve.
People evolve. We're all in a journey here. other than that, I think it's a fairly straightforward chapter. Anyone else with anything else?
I like the Blackfish.
Yeah,
I think he's
like
the best of the North.
He really is. Yeah.
I know, what's his name? Stefan Sasse thinks he's like a war criminal because he kicked out all the non-fighters from River Run.
That's not a war criminal. He didn't put them to the torch himself.
I know. I'm just saying.
He's giving them a chance. If they're all inside, they're all going to die in their useless mouths.
It's just realpolitik, isn't it? I mean.
Well, I get it. Like, you've paid a tithe to these lords, and then when it's time for them to protect you come wartime, you're supposed to have safe harbor in the castle, and he kicks you all out.
Yeah, but this war's been going on for quite a while.
I don't think the length of the war matters when it comes to defending your people.
I think size matters there, Brett.
You would.
Yes. Okay. Any points in this chapter, though?
I agree that Jaime deals with that quite smartly. And I also, it's again, and the previous chapter as well, you can again see how he wants to forget about Aerys Targaryen, or at least he is just like throwing Aerys Targaryen in my face again. He's tired of it, and no one gives him any chance to show that he can actually care about his vows. And I think it's quite sad how everyone mocks him or believes that he's making false excuse when he says, I cannot take arms against House Tully because I swore to Lady Catelyn I wouldn't. I find it sad.
Well, to be fair, we get his inner monologue and they don't.
Yeah.
They only see him like one day, whereas we're on a journey with him. So it's tough.
Yeah, when you have the nickname Kingslayer, it's hard to live it down.
Yeah,
well, it's
for sure.
It comes back to the whole honor thing. Like, he, once you lose that honor, it's hard to get it back. And he's still struggling with it.
Yeah. The comparison between Ned Stark and Brendan Tully, like he's looking at me the same way Ned Stark looked at me when he found me right after Aerys. It's telling, I think.
Would have been better if he was like sitting on the floor when Ned Stark showed up. Maybe everything would have gone differently.
Yeah, I'd be like, look what happened. He fell on my sword a couple times. And...
I can't understand why Jaime didn't, like, tell people what he did. Like, the whole wildfire
I know. Thing. Why this kind of, like, secrecy and martyrdom? Sorry, Nadia.
Just why he climbed up the, like, pretty tall, sharp chair to go and sit and, like, smug on it.
Oh, maybe he met him at the top.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a dick anyway.
But like, why did he sit down? I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? That's the charge against him.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, like, if he climbed the stairs to confront, I don't really know how it went down, but if he climbed the stairs to confront Ares and killed him at the top and then just sat down after he killed him, that's not that weird to me. He's just pondering what he just did.
Yeah, but I think he was just, like, I always thought that he climbed the Iron Throne after killing Ares. He didn't climb up to kill him.
I always pictured it the other way around, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's in the text. I could be very wrong. Right.
Judging by Jamie's POVs, he's almost kind of wanting to be the victim and then using that to justify his behaviors that make him an asshole. Like, you know, like pushing Bran out the window would have been like, well, he would have, like, no one gives a shit anyway, so they're probably just blame me anyway, so I might as well just push him out the window. Or else, like, you know, he just doesn't think.
They're probably happy to not have another mouth to feed. Why you need so many kids anyway?
Easy, Brett.
What?
What?
More on this chapter?
Just that it's quite nice to see, like the flays that Jaime sends away with Robbed Clown, seeing how it ends up in Undead Cats later.
Yeah, and Ryman never makes it to the twins, or do they find him hanging, or I forget which, but he just disappears at some point, and with her in possession of the crown later, we know that he's probably not doing so well.
I like the blackfish, but it's not cool to insult Jaime for losing his hand. That was mean.
that was what you had problems with?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, he can insult him for being the Kingslayer, but you know.
It's not his fault he lost his hand.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
I did find this chapter sad. Like, it made me sad again about Rob and the young wolf story.
Yeah, like I said, in my chapter, I really liked the fact that there's a dire wolf still flying above Riverrun, so when that gets taken down, that's gonna be a son of a bitch. Yeah. Also, was it this chapter or my chapter where Jamie's talking about meeting Jane Westerling and he met her once a long time ago but doesn't remember what she looks like?
No. I think that was your chapter because he was talking to the first guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And thinking that she must be fair to be worth a kingdom.
Yep. Yeah, that was my chapter.
Yeah.
Huh, I should have brought that up.
Ready for the next chapter?
Muy bien.
Muy bien. Okay, so after Jaime 6 and Feast, we go to Tyrion 8 and Dance on May 10th. And the chapter summary is by...
That's me.
Yay. Okay, off you go, Mary.
Tyrion is aboard the Salisari Coran, which he learns means fragrant stewards, or rather stinky stewards to him. They are officially on their way to Koth, although they will be going to Meereen, as Tyrion knows. He watches the evening prayer led by Mokoro, a red priest from the Summer Islands. Tyrion asks Mokoro if what he sees in the flames, to which he replies that he sees dragons, true and false, with Tyrion looming in the middle of it all. Throughout this journey, Tyrion is quite lonely. He reads the same three books over and over again, and they're not good books. And he thinks how easy it would be to just go into the dark sea at night and just disappear. Jorah is still boring, still not nice, and Tyrion pities Penny and befriends her, although it's not easy at first, because she blames him for the death of her brother. He apologizes for that. He tells her it was not him that killed her brother, but rather his sister Cersei. So that's not an easy relationship. There's a terrible storm later. And after that, Penny tells Tyrion that the storm frightened her and that she realized she did not actually want to die. So they have something in common. Penny tells Tyrion that she does not truly really blame him for the death of her brother, but she's still quite stricken from grief. They begin to spend more and more time together. They have their meals together and so on. And Tyrion's playful attitude begins to cheer her up. She asks him if he would tilt with her, but he says no, and afterwards wonders if tilt actually meant tilt. But the answer would have to be all
men should know that whenever girls talk to them, we really are just trying to pull you.
Yeah, that's all we do.
I've always been under that impression.
Yeah, then they actually draw close to the coast of Valyria, and they see the flaming skies and so on. Mokoro says that he has seen in his flames that there are others seeking Daenerys. Tyrion thinks of Yongryph, but he decides not to mention another Targaryen, since the Red God prophecies don't seem to have room for two heroes. Tyrion asks Mokoro what else he has seen, to which he replies that he sees only their shadows, but one most of all. It is a tall and twisted thing with one black eye, 10 arms, and sailing on a sea of blood. And that's the end of the chapter.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't remember most of this chapter. I probably read like Dance of Dragons once, maybe.
Well, welcome back. What'd you think?
Yeah, Penny's such a useful addition, don't you think, Nadia?
Oh, yeah, it was fascinating. But yeah, it was super long. Like, Dance of Dragons has a lot of just extra baggage that it didn't need.
Agreed.
Does anybody think the Celesori Koran is the perfume seneschal?
Perfume seneschal, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. I don't know why we've spent so much time debating on which of Daenerys' advisors is the perfume seneschal when it's like right there.
The fragrant steward.
But why would she have to be aware of it?
It's probably because we haven't read these chapters again and again, like we have with Somathor.
Yeah. Well, it's got Tyrion, Jorah, and Mokoro on it, so maybe one of the three.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't make it anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
She just needs to be aware of it because all three of them are on it.
Hmm.
Yeah,
but like the ship doesn't make it, so what the fuck?
They're not actually gonna arrive on that ship, though.
They don't say like watch. She said watch out for, not beware of.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Speaking...
But it can't be a coincidence, right?
No, I don't think it's a coincidence.
But I don't think so.
Yeah. I think it might just be Martin playing with us.
He wouldn't do that to us.
No.
So what do you make of Macquarie's vision? I mean, it seemed to me he was very straightforwardly alleging that Tyrion was another type of the many diverse dragons he's seen in his dreams. Am I over-egging?
Seemed like it.
The vision, yeah.
And then so he obviously the way we'll get seems Euron, right?
Yeah. Cthulhu. Yeah.
Maybe we get confirmation of Tyrion being a Targaryen through a Red Priest.
Because he's in between the fake dragon and real dragon? I thought that was just Griffin Daenerys.
There's dragons all around you and you're in the middle. I don't know.
Clowns to the left of me. Drivers to the...
When was Euron exiled?
Targaryen killed his wife.
Yeah, but when was that? Do we know?
I feel like that's like 3 years or something before the action of the books takes place, or a couple years.
Only that? I got the idea that was before Balon's rebellion.
I thought it was definitely after.
He wasn't there.
He burnt the ships at Lannister. That was Euron's plan.
Wasn't that Victarion? Wasn't he the one commanding the Iron Fleet?
I thought it was Euron's plan to set aflame the Lannister fleet.
Hmm.
I'm just curious because they bring up him and Jaehaerys in the same chapter, and I wonder if they're going to be connected.
Maybe
they were kind of in the same place. Huh?
One of the mutes on his boat is Jaehaerys.
That'd be kind of neat. I don't know how we find out about it, but...
They focused on one blonde oarsman.
again from A Wiki of Ice and Fire, it said that it was actually Euron's plan to sail into Lannisport and burn the Lannister fleet, but it is indeed Victarion who commanded the Iron Fleet. And followed the plan and did that, and Euron was exiled sometime after that, a few years after that.
Do we know what year that was?
297 AC. So
that was only three years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I told you 3 years.
Jaehaerys left 10 years ago.
Oh my God, Farley's going to be unbearable now because he was right.
Now.
Well.
Thank you.
Differently unbearable.
Very good.
So why are women bad luck at sea?
I don't know, but it's always, you always hear that whenever you talk about a ship and a woman on board, it's always bad luck.
Probably, well, mostly because typically there were a bunch of horny men, and if you had one woman, yes, it was going to cause like angst and strife and fighting, right? So
it would be, yeah, there would be infighting.
It doesn't matter what period of, like, what period the book is set in, what location of the world it's set in. A woman on board is always bad luck.
Not with Nymeria. They made it. It was good.
Yeah, but historically, women are bad luck on ships because, like you said, they cause internal strife and jealousy when you're supposed to be working as like a cohesive unit to make sure you guys don't die. Some people get protective of a woman or jealous of a woman. There's certain privacy things that are afforded women on ships that aren't afforded the common sailors. So that's a different kind of jealousy. Anyway, that's why they're bad luck.
Mm. All right.
Oh, about Penny. There was something important that
fuck
you said.
Penny.
No, whoa. Wait.
I hate her as a character so much.
At this point in the books, we still don't know who killed Joffrey, right? Like, we still don't have clear evidence. But in this case, she mentions that it was one of the Kettleblacks. She mentions it was either Oswald or Osmond. And Tyrion presumably thinks that it's because one of them is in the Kingsguard and one of them is sleeping with Cersei. So, but we know that they're actually in Littlefinger's employ.
Yep.
So I think that's one of the first hints that we've gotten, that Littlefinger is the one who...
Does she say one of them kills Joffrey? I thought she was just saying that's the man
just
who
said
found
that,
us. Yeah.
Yeah, that he's the one who hired us.
Yeah, so and doesn't...
Littlefinger was the one engineering the whole thing.
All right.
But doesn't Baelish already say, like, their loyalties are compromised because they are now, like, in
to
a better
fucking
position?
Cersei.
Yeah, but then she's not sure which of the Kettleblacks it was.
Interesting. I hate her as a character. I feel like she's entirely unnecessary. And if she plays a role in Tyrion's return to the good side, then I guess that's all right. But I think they could have happened another way. Like, I just, yeah, it's just so useless as a...
I think it's her purpose. It's her main purpose. But yeah, it's almost too obvious in this chapter that she brings him back to trying to be nice and caring about people.
Could she be an agent for Littlefinger?
Oh, no.
No.
Yeah. I don't think she'd trust him after her brother gets his head cut off.
That'll do it for you. Right there.
That's so devastating to think about. Like, her brother got his head cut off for Tyrion. Not for Tyrion. I don't think this is Tyrion's fault. But it's just crazy. Like, her brother, like, her only person in her life that cared about her, was killed and his head was cut off. That's crazy.
Yeah, but lots of people died because of other people in these books.
I just think of it more like from a standpoint, like, think about if like a family member of yours was beheaded. That would be, I mean, granted, it's probably more shocking to us than
like
a
star child.
I think beheading was more normal in those days, wasn't it?
So. Yeah, that's what I was saying.
And general bodily mutilation.
But it's like all she had, except for the dog and the pig, but and for nothing, really.
I actually think, I know Penny is a bit pointless as a character and whatever, but I actually think for a very briefly seen character, she's very well written. And I like the way she goes through different emotions of wanting vengeance and then just complete depression and sadness and then kind of feeling sorry for what she's done and kind of in her rational mind knowing it's not really Tyrion's fault, but I just think it's a really beautifully beautiful piece of writing. And I know we accuse Dance of being baggy and stuff, but I just like the way George is able to do these quick character sketches and create these really, to me, it's a really credible and kind of well built out example of what someone might feel in these circumstances.
She goes a long way in one chapter. She goes from wanting to him dead, basically, to wanting
to kill him.
Tilt with him? Yeah.
But
we
then
all
this
know
guy
what that means.
Covers a few days, right?
Yeah.
But it's one chapter is what I'm getting at. I guess she doesn't want to kill him at the beginning of this
chapter.
Did
you really want more detail in this chapter? Did you want like every single day covered?
Ugh.
No, I wanted none of it covered.
We do in this book move at about a chapter a day though. I mean that is where we are. I think April had about 2 chapters a day.
I think there should have been more Mokoro and Tyrion talking and less Penny and Tyrion talking.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Mokoro's got some shit to say and I want to hear it.
Who picks him up? They find
Victarion,
him. Victarion.
Victarion. Gives him his lava arm.
Yeah. I was like, it's definitely not Euron. Yeah. Victarion.
He's the one. Stupid. He's the one who heals Victarion's hand.
Yep. They just find him afloat in the ocean, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, like after days and days where like no one else should have been alive. Plus, he's got cool face tattoos.
And he's twice as wide as Jorah. Which is so that's why he was so buoyant. He could float.
He was just laying on his back the entire time.
Like Baloo the bear.
Exactly. Spitting up water like a water fountain.
Tyrion's sort of the Mowgli in this example.
Mm. You think Makaro like was able to get some clams and eat them on his belly like an otter?
Probably not. I don't think you're going to find clams in the middle of the ocean that you can get to.
You find all sorts of shit in the middle of the ocean.
That you can get to? Don't you have to swim down to the bottom to get your clam?
Yeah.
But not the swimming clams.
Do they come all the way up to the surface?
In the narrow sea, they do. All right.
Are you sure?
Moon dragons? They're swimming
he's
clams
in
the
narrow sea anymore.
I'm observing the irony of people here accusing George of being baggy and going off piste while we're discussing whether you can pick up swimming clams from the surface of the ocean.
This is very important, Bino.
This is VOC important, which is a different thing entirely.
So, guys, women are bad luck on ships, like as we already discussed, but with their boobs out are good luck at sea, and that's why mastheads mostly have topless women's, because it shames the seas into being calm.
Because boobs are scary?
No, because boobs are placating.
Wasn't it Aaron that wanted to put, like, a penis on his because he wanted, like, pissing out a fire or something?
What?
Aaron, before he, like, turned into Dampfer. He like bet a guy that he could piss out a hearth fire.
And he did.
And he called it like the golden something, the golden shower or something like that. I don't remember. But he wanted to put a penis on the masthead, and Balon wouldn't let him.
I don't remember that. I remember him saying he pissed out a fire and ate goat all winter or something like that.
Wow, you remembered that, but you don't remember him wanting to put a dick on a masthead.
Does anyone else remember this? I think this might have been a fever dream of yours, Brett.
I don't think so.
I can't say I remember it, but that says nothing.
I don't remember it either.
Oh, look who's the asshole now, Brett.
That's me. It's like the golden storm. I'll look that shit up. I'll tell you.
Anything else on this specific chapter by any chance?
Do you know what else is bad luck on boats? Bananas.
Bananas?
What? Yeah, because back in the early days of the Caribbean trade, when they'd be hauling bananas, they'd all ferment and turn into a explosive substance and then blow up the ship, and then the ship would sink. Bananas, people.
Well, ships exploding and stuff. They have a fire on this ship.
Well, Makoro could tend it.
Yeah, but it just it did strike me as weird. Like in Sam's chapter, the death of Aemon, they cannot burn him until they are not at sea anymore. Because, well, obviously, you're not going to burn a corpse on a ship. But here, it doesn't seem to be as much of an issue.
Yeah, I was wondering that too. But then there is the difference between Sam and Makoro, right?
Yeah.
That's probably it. And Sam wanted to burn an entire body, whereas Makoro is just burning a few coals in an iron.
Yeah, I think a brazier is like easier to handle on a boat and more allowable depending on what type of boat and rigging it has.
I think it's also, in this case, Makoro really has the upper hand here. He's the one actually leading this whole thing. So if he wants a fire, he can have his fire.
Mm-hmm. And it helps that most of the crew believe in Rolo.
Yeah.
I mean, the old whaling ships used to have like big ovens burning to render down the blubber into oil. So, you know, it's not an unheard of thing, but like I said, depending on the ship and people on it. And it sounds like they're pro-fire. But no bananas.
I think it sounds like we've said everything we need to say about these three chapters.
Sounds good.
Unless anyone has anything that's genuinely about these chapters to say.
Oh, well, no then. I'm trying to look it up, but my iPod is like being a dick, so.
A dick on a ship?
Huh? Yeah, that's right.
Right.
No, wait.
Go then.
He drank much and claimed no man could piss longer or farther than him. He once wagered his ship against a flock of goats that he could douse a hearth fire for urinating on it, and subsequently outraged his brother Lord Balon by naming his ship the Golden Storm. And it doesn't say it here, but he wanted to put a dick on
Oh, it doesn't say it in the book?
It didn't happen, dude.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
my God. You went back to canon. You went back to text to back you up, and it wasn't in the text.
Dude, say
this
that.
Isn't text from the book. I don't even own the books. This is from Wiki of Ice and Fire. Hold on, let me click on
Gold. Wait, hold on. You don't own a Song of Ice and Fire books?
Nah.
Seriously?
I got them at the library back when I like read them, and now I just listen to it.
Oh, you have audiobooks, okay. Fine.
Now, yeah. Fine. I do own the audiobooks.
Fine, okay. I was just scandalized briefly.
Threatened to hang him from her mast when he heard the sort of ram his brother intended to mount upon the prow.
What kind of ram?
To serve as a graphic monument to Aaron's accomplishment. If that doesn't mean dick, I don't know what it means.
But did say that he ate goat all winter.
He probably did, because he bet the ship against his flock of goats.
Okay, well, on that slightly awkward note, I'm going to close out this episode of the Linear Song of Ice and Fire reread. For those following along at home, the next episode is going to be hosted by me. Again, sorry, apologies. And we'll cover Cersei 8 and 9 from Feast. So we're getting a lot of Lannisters at the moment. And then the Elaine 2 Sansa 3 chapter from Feast, which is the last published Sansa chapter, brackets ever. ? So just let that roll around for a while. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to my co-hosts Nadia, Mary, Jock, Matt and Brett. Thank you guys.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Are you still doing your whole winter beard, summer bit, summer no beard thing, Vali?
No, now I'm doing a fatherly beard, which got hacked to pieces and is very short right now, but I'm looking forward to growing it out so I can get all sorts of vomit and poop into it.
Poop? How are you getting poop in your beard, man?
I don't know. I've never changed a child before. A lot of things could go off. I'm not sure.
Don't get too close.
Yeah.
If your beard's in it, you're too close.
Noted. Bananas, people.
Is it quite scary, Matt, thinking one day your daughter might sort of like go back in time and listen to this?
if she could go back in time and just listen to this part of my life, I'd take that 10,000 times over. Now, if she saw me in my mid-20s, hoy. Bananas, people.
Yeah, I was lazy and I basically took the summary that was on the dock. I don't even know where that came from.
That comes from the fine folks at Tower of the Hand.
Are you sure? Because it's a summary from like Dance. They don't have these.
Oh, in that case, it's from...
They don't have these.
Wiki.
Yeah, probably.
I think it's from the wiki. Because basically, I compiled these voluminous... So for the listener, we have this like Google Doc of Doom, which basically has all of our episodes planned out. And it has like how many pages and chapters ahead and back you go between each chapter. And it has the chapter summary. And I did this ages ago, right? Because how old is the reread? Yeah. So I think...
Older than my children.
Yeah. Yeah, Jesus. It's so depressing. Yeah, so
basically, I took that and made a few modifications. But it's basically from that.
Awesome.
Before you start, Marie, do you think the listeners are more or less disappointed that there's some structure to these, depending on like what
episodes
they listen to?
How did they think there was not? I mean, we're on episode 85, so even as shambolic as we are, like.
Just how structureless some of the episodes have been, to know that there's been this scaffolding in the background this entire time.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, all I would say is that I think I sat down and did this when we were on about episode 30. I think if I had sat down and, like, genuinely thought of how many episodes it was going to take to do this reread when I started, I wouldn't have started.
it's a good thing you didn't think about it then.
Because like, that'd be a lesson to everyone. Just act before you think. It works out.
Yeah.
Because I think we started this basically shortly, well, not shortly after, but we'd done the Lord of the Rings reread together, like me, Vali, Brett, Nadia, we're on a lot of those together. And that was 8 parts.
Oh, that was long.
That felt long, right?
8 episodes long.
And I thought, well, this will be long, but it won't be, it'll be like, you know, we did Lord of the Rings, so this won't be much longer than that. Well, that was 3 books. This is 5 books. I don't think I ever envisaged that it would be like 103 episodes.
And yet here we are.
Trudging along to our doom.
The things we do for love.
Bananas, people. Okay. No one else's bad luck on the ship? What? Redheads. You can counter the bad luck if you talk to them before they talk to you.
Where are you looking this shit up?
Bananas, people.
There's a poll to be done when this series is complete of just who's the biggest dick in the books.
Well, that'd be Big Ben Plum.
No, who's the biggest dick, not who has the biggest dick.
Oh, I misunderstood.
What are we interested in here?
Although the two are not mutually exclusive.
The biggest dick is definitely Ramsay. Sorry, yes. The biggest dick is Ramsay.
No, I think, but he's malevolent. I think being a dick is more sort of like, you know, ineffectual but annoying.
Ineffectual and annoying. That's what Bina thinks of dicks, everybody.
I think it's what most women think of dicks, to be honest.
Oh, my wife is definitely in your camp.
Bananas, people.